What's up, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of the Cheeky Midweeky, where we are making strength and conditioning not boring anymore. In today's episode, I am joined by Coach Jeremy Golden, where we talk about golf performance and why has this become such a niche population for, you know, people that are in the private sector, but also the fact that there are now more and more strength coaches working with golf and golf athletes taking it seriously in college. When I first worked with golf in 2012 at Harvard, they didn't really want to train. Fast forward to my time at Towson, and they were loving training. Look at what William Whalen is doing with golfers. So the field of golf has continued to explode. That's why we've brought this episode to you. Before we dive into it, please hit that subscribe button as it helps our show grow and it does not cost you a dime. Also, if you set a rating and review for us and send that to us at service@strengthcoachnetwork.com, we have a free gift to you for rating and reviewing the show. Here at Strength Coach Network, we pride ourselves on giving you the best quality information from strength and conditioning coaches and practitioners that still work with or have worked with athletes. This is not theory. We are always about giving you practical information that you can apply day one, the minute you're done listening to this. And you can check us out for a $1 trial in the link down below. Click that link and find out more about us. Vacations are meant for you to be outside doing things that you love and reconnecting with your family and your friends and recharging your battery. It is not meant for you to travel and listen to some coach talk in a conference hall and eat some food that you know really isn't the best thing that you want to be eating. Take back your vacations and do so with a Strength Coach Network annual membership. When you purchase an annual membership, you're going to get access to our course, Performance Coaching 101. In the subsequent years, it'll renew and you'll get access to 102 and 103. Each year, you're going to get access to 2 NSCA CEUs and 10 CSCCA CEUs. These CEUs will allow you to be able to learn from the comfort of your office. You'll be able to earn CEUs on your time rather than having to travel. Take back your vacation and be able to do this with a Strength Coach Network annual membership. Click the link down below for more information.
Go and train athletes and get people better.
Hey, I'm with it. It's all good. I'm happy to help.
So, go ahead and introduce yourself. We met at NatCon, and we've obviously continued to communicate, but give everybody a background so they know where you're at and everything that you're doing.
Yeah, so my name is Jeremy Golden. I have been the director of fitness at Tehama Golf Club now. This is my third year here. Spent years in the college and pro game before this. I was with the LA Sparks and the WNBA for a year. I was in the NBA Developmental League when it was still called the D League. Now it's the G League. I was with the Albuquerque Thunderbirds when they were still in existence. Then I went to the college level, Colgate briefly, Cornell for 6 years. And then I more shifted into the basketball realm for a while. I was at Providence with women's basketball, Santa Clara as their director with women's basketball and a few other sports. And then went to New Mexico and then Virginia for 3 years with women's basketball. And then, yeah, and then got into hockey for a year and decided that, you know, golf has always been something I've really wanted. And as you can tell, I've been around a lot. And I think I wanted to be back out where I knew people, where I was comfortable. And, you know, you get to a point in life where it's time to just stop all the bouncing. So I got this chance to come out here to California and love the area. I'm an hour from San Jose, which is where I used to live, and it's one of my favorite places. So it's been a good thing for me here. It's been a shift in my career, but it's been a really good shift.
The golf world, I'm starting to learn a little bit more about it. And I did a little bit of research last week, you know, getting prepared for this conversation with you. Talk about the golf world and how, like, golf performance, especially like Tiger kind of changed it, but now these athletes that happen to play golf that are really good at golf, like, talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think Tiger is the needle. He has been for many years, and what he did on the fitness side of things really caught people's eye. The way he trained, the way he pushed his body was something that wasn't seen in golf. I mean, I think you have players beforehand, like Gary Player, who has been, you know, we're probably the first golfer to ever lift back in the 50s and 60s, and he's still doing it to this day. And then golfers tried it and they didn't succeed to a degree. I mean, it wasn't understood. And as you know, there's a science behind every kind of performance training you do, whether it be for golf, football, basketball, there's a science behind it. And, you know, Tiger is also Tiger. I mean, he's, in my opinion, the greatest of all time. and he was able to push those limits and catch people's eye. And I think it really caught on and people said, hey, this is an athletic sport. This is a game that isn't just for people out there drinking beer, smoking cigars, and and enjoying a nice Sunday afternoon. You know, at the elite level, at the professional level, they're athletes. And, you know, it's one of the most explosive movements in sports. You know, that, you know, from here down to here is so explosive. I mean, you're recruiting over 90% of your major muscle groups. They're producing 120 mile an hour swing speed, 175 mile an hour ball speed. I mean, it's crazy what they're doing. So then it became something where, you know, it's a copycat world. So more golfers followed. And now what you've seen, I think, is an uptick in the golf. I like to say golf strength and conditioning. You see an uptick in that now, and all the guys are doing it. And it's really cool to see, from my perspective, to see the type of care that, you know, both male and female golfers are giving to their body and what they're investing in it, whether it be hiring trainers, whether it be nutritionists or building home gyms or whatever that looks like for them. And if you go to a PGA event and you see the tour performance trailer, I've had the opportunity to go in there a few times and it's really cool. They have a trailer just specifically for strength and conditioning. They have one just for the athletic trainers. And then they have one for recovery with infrared sauna, cold plunge, Normatec, steam room, you name it. So it's become a big deal. And now, you know, the number one player in the world, Scottie Scheffler, is a very big proponent of training. I mean, he's very efficient in his training. He's got, I think, probably one of the best trainers in the world working with him, in my opinion, and Troy Van Beesen. And he's done it the right way, and he's taking care of his body, and it shows. I don't think you become number one in the world by accident.
No, you come that way by action. And one of the things that I wrote down and some things I think coaches have to try to balance is like, yes, it's obviously phosphocreatine, like just the swing, right? It doesn't take long. But you're doing that, like, especially like you said, at that level, you're walking the course, and just the day in and day outness of the aerobic system being able to help you recover from the training, the actual having to focus on the putt, being out on the course, like that in and of itself is a demand on the body. So it's, yeah, you have to do, you know, explosive movements for a very short amount of time, but you're out there for 4 hours and you're walking. If you're not just riding around on the golf cart, like you said, with your boys, just getting hammered, drinking a bunch of beer.
Yeah, no, it's different. And the walking component is one that people don't think about. Yeah. I mean, you're not running and jumping and playing Correct. Football. It's different. It's a different sport. It's like, you know, I mean, football is different than tennis. Tennis is different than golf. Golf is different than swimming. Every sport has its unique, perspective and unique attribute to it. But yeah, in golf, it really is. The walk can be just as hard. I mean, you are walking about some courses, 7 to 8 miles up and down hills. And it is really, really hard on the body. Not to mention, if you want to think about the heart rate, they're stepping over a putt that could feasibly, you know, win them millions of dollars. They got to get that heart rate calmed down. And I think one thing the PGA Tour has done, they partner with Whoop. And, you know, they've shown some of the heart rates of guys on certain shots. And it's really cool to see that, you know, they're over a putt and their heart rate's going 130, 140 beats a minute. That's a lot of stress on the body. So
no, it is. And that's, you know, like, and this putt might make or break $2 million, right? For the highest. But then even it's like, it's the difference between 100,000 or 500,000. Like, we're talking several hundred thousand dollars. And do you have the ability to make the putt after all that other physical activity, not to mention the fact you're outside, so the sun's beating down on you because you're golfing in these nice locations and you're traveling, you're not sleeping as ideally. So it's not like, yes, I'm not saying it's the hardest. No, I understand that there's harder jobs. Like if you're working construction, like I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
But if you have to actually go and train a golf athlete, you need to understand all the demands that go into it, whether you're training a high school golfer that nowadays mom and dad are spending money to help him or her get good because of the potential path, if you're working at it in college, or if you're working at it with professional athletes, because there's golfers all over the world, or even that amateur athlete that wants to just get a little bit better at golf. Like one guy for me, he was a former baseball player. He likes to golf. He wants to be good at golf and hit the ball a little bit further.
Yeah, and I mean, that's, you find a lot of that.
Team Builder has been my trusted source for online software programs for my athletes since 2019. Since then, they've continued to grow. They have this new practice integration where practice planning can integrate with the sport coach. You have your sports science, your AMS, the questionnaires. They've continued to evolve and keep giving you the things that you need. It has made my life easier as a strength coach. I want the same for you. You do not need to keep printing on lift cards. Please, printing on lift cards in Excel, you don't need to do that. If you need help being able to purchase it, they have a pre-written grant on their website. They're also part owners in the Plyomat with Coach Rich Burnett. So if you need to get a good device that can accurately and validly and quickly get your jump height and ground contact time, so now you can get RSI, Plyomat's a great choice. We utilize that at Goldfinch. Check Team Builder. Check them out in the link down below. Please stop printing on lift cards. It's going to make your life easier. It's going to make your athlete's life easier. It's easier to program on the back end. Check out Team Builder in the link down below.
And I think just with golf itself, it is a sport that you can get better at as you get older. I mean, it's one of those cool sports. If you put the effort into it, you can get better at it and you can get really strong. I mean, a lot of my clientele right now are what you're talking about, the amateur golfers, the 5 handicaps, the 6 handicaps, and they're older guys. And I mean, case in point, I had a 78-year-old client throw up 200 pounds on a hex bar deadlift today for 6 reps. And it was almost more exciting to me than when I've had athletes throw 400 or 500 pounds, because it meant so much to him. And, you know, I mean, that's one thing I've tried to build here is, you know, that we're all athletes. And so how I'm going to train you is I'm going to train you like you are playing on the PGA Tour. And because that's what people want to feel like, you know, we all want to have that moment where we can feel really good about ourselves and try to get as good as we can at the sport. You know, I mean, we're all realists. We all know that, you know, there's 125 guys who pretty much make it on the tour each year. And there's how many millions of golfers in the world, but that doesn't mean you don't strive to be the very best version of yourself. And I think that's where the training comes in, and that's where it can get to be a lot of fun.
One thing that somebody had asked before that I wanted to get your opinion on, golfers, whether you're a righty or a lefty, everything you're doing is that one way. Mm-hmm. In this world of strength coaches, we're always, we got to balance the imbalance, the asymmetry. Like, you're never going to be able to outdo all of the practice swings and the swing. Like, so how much of it is in the weight room that you're trying to chase, you know, symmetry within it, like fixing a imbalance / continuing to strengthen a position of power that you're working from?
It's all part of it. I mean, I think one of my favorite quotes that I've come up with is, there's more than one ingredient in a pie. So it's everything. I think I will train golfers on both sides because we want to be strong on both sides. Are we going to fully balance out that asymmetry? No, we're not. I mean, because if you're hitting 100 golf balls a day at practicing and you're an amateur, I mean, think of pros, they're hitting thousands of balls. You're going to create those imbalances, and there's nothing really you can do. So you just stay strong on both sides. And it's not, I don't really look at it as I'm trying to catch somebody up from one side to the next. What I'm trying to do is just keep them strong. And since they're doing so much on that one side, we need to strengthen that one side, but we also need to strengthen the non-dominant side, the side that's not getting a lot of work too, because that's where you're going to break down.
One of the things that I saw in my research preparing for this is just how much of the stuff is like, oh, just take these bands, go do these bands at home. Like, how much of it did you have to kind of fight that of like, hey, listen, sure. At some point when you've done nothing, like, hey, that's more than doing nothing. But at some point, specific adaptation to imposed demands, you have to put more of a load on your body. How hard was that conversation with people that might have bought what had been sold to them as, all you need is this band to go and swing this in your, you know, put it in your garage. And, you know, they might have spent $200-$300 on a band and a stick. But how do you do that?
You know, I think a lot of it comes with just showing them explaining why you're doing what you're doing, explaining how it's going to help them, and then putting it to action. And then when they see how they feel, they're bought in. That's kind of what, then they start buying in. They're not bought in, but then they start buying in. So I think it's really just, it's like we talk about in anything, explain the why and show them the how of what, of why it's going to help them and how it helps them, and then put it into action. And then what I like to do is I like to ask a lot of questions and get their feedback. Okay, how did this feel? How did this feel? And, you know, if they're really bought into some of that other stuff, I throw it in. I mean, I have a mix of bands and
And that's not to say that we can't, but like what I'm thinking of is like even the college guy or the anybody that's like, you know, my athlete, all they want to do is like use bands. How do you try to like, because you've been so successful in it, what would be kind of some of your ways to help them understand the important, like, is that the way, like, hey, throw it in and give it, give them a little bit of what they want wrapped in a package of what they need?
Yeah, I would say at least starting out. And then you slowly take out the what they want if it's not good for them. And then you give them what they need. I think I've actually had more difficult conversations with college athletes and college coaches about that than the current clients I have. I mean, there's a fear. And there's a fear. I mean, there was a fear with a lot of college coaches of, you know, uh-oh, my guys are going to get too stiff. That's what you always hear. We're going to get too stiff. And they're not going to be able to swing the club as fast because they're too stiff. So we need long, gangly muscle. You know, like really? Yes.
Is it going back to the days of like, oh, that lifting thing is going to get you too big and bulky?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, there's still that out there. And then, you know, the other side of it too is you get some coaches, and I've seen this with certain coaches, that they want to have the football-type workouts with their golfers. Huh. Where we got to be tough. We got to be strong. We got to do this. Like, can't we just train for your sport? Let's just train. Let's just get strong. We don't need all this extracurricular. You know, so you see both sides of it. But from what you're saying, how you explain it is basically I explain the why. I explain the how it's going to help you. And then we go from there. And I wrap it. Like you said, I like what you said. Yeah, wrap the needs around a little bit of what they want. And then they're like, oh, well, I did my band stuff today. Yeah, well, you also did X, Y, and Z that really helped you out too. So
that's fantastic. But yeah, like, I mean, that's, you know, today the fascia episode I did with Andrew Mitchell and Michel Delcourt came out. And like, that was the thing that Andrew talked a lot about in the episode, or Dominic Walker, who's at Mississippi State. He wasn't on that episode, but he was on, and he's talked about, he's like, a lot of these people that do the fascia stuff or the band stuff, like, sure, you're training that, but you're also training your muscles, because again, your muscles are wrapped in fascia, so you can't separate the two. But he's like, what Andrew and Dom were saying, he's like, a lot of people that are doing this nowadays have forgotten the fact that those dudes that were doing it right, the Todd Wrights, they're still lifting those dudes really, really heavy. Yep. And still do it. It's not, oh, we're only like you said, it's not only doing the bands. Like, yeah, sure, we did. That was the, you know, your A2 or your B2 paired with, you know, like you said, that heavy trap bar deadlift for that person. You know what I mean?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I do that pair all the time. I do a hex bar deadlift paired with a face pull.
There you go. Like, and, oh, look, hey, you're training the posterior of your shoulder. Like, you should feel good about your, you know, your shoulders and whatnot.
Exactly. You know, I had this discussion many years ago with a coach when I was at Cornell. It wasn't a golf coach, but I was doing a lot of band work with his athletes along with heavy lifting. And he's like, well, nobody uses bands. Bands aren't good. It's like, what do you mean bands aren't good? I said, some of the best power lifters, bodybuilders in the world are using bands. Yeah. And I showed him why. He still didn't get it. So I did it anyway, but...
Yeah, that'd be like the carpenter if we were both like building house. I'm like, Jeremy, why are you still using a flathead screwdriver? Like, those don't work.
Yeah, like, exactly,
what about,
right?
Like, what about when I have a screw that's flathead? Well, they just don't work, Jeremy.
Yeah, they don't work. Yeah.
Golly. common injuries in golf. What are some of the things that you see the most that maybe kind of surprise people?
I don't know if they – I mean, obviously hips, back. I mean, obviously the back is going to be – it's a very hard sport in your back. Ankles. You see more ankles than you think, because the ankle – you need a lot of ankle mobility in the golf swing. Yep. So if you're not training your ankles properly – and I mean, I'm talking – it doesn't have to be crazy like physical therapy type stuff, but I do a lot of calf raises for myself. I do a lot of calf raises with golfers. Another one that isn't talked about is neck. You get really tight up in here because there's so much thoracic spine mobility needed in the golf swing that if you don't have it, you can get tight. You know, a lot of us are rounded now. So that's why I do a lot of face pulls to work the posterior shoulders, a lot of pull aparts. But you see a lot of neck injuries, a lot of tight necks. I've seen it. I've seen a lot of people, especially as we get older too, you know, the neck starts becoming beat up. They start shrugging more. Like if you're doing a pull down, they'll shrug like that.
Hawken Dynamics is my preferred choice for force plates and for handheld dynamometers. Made in the USA up in Maine, I have been using them since 2020 when I was at Towson University. Still use them at Goldfinch today, and I brought the plates to the high school that I've trained at. We will use the plates and transport them when we train athletes at the many different high schools that we currently work at. As I said, they are a handheld dynamometer as well with the true strength. You can assess athlete internal, external rotation, hip, AB, adduction, calf strength, hip, whatever you want to assess, you can do with the true strength. It also has the ability to pair with the difference striking machine. So now you can see single strike, multiple strike. Check out Hawken Dynamics down in the link down below.
So I've been focusing a lot on neck recently with my clients.
Huh. I guess I never would have thought about that within the golf swing, but you're right. That does make a ton of sense. I obviously thought about the foot because that's where you're going to generate all your power from.
Of course.
A lot of coaches are always going to be doing dorsiflexion stuff, but like how much inversion, eversion stuff are you doing? Because that's also going to really dictate what's going on with that golf swing.
Yep. And I like to do a lot of calf raises based, you know, from different angles, you know, like toes in, toes out, things like that, you know, I'll do, if somebody has very, very tight ankles, you know, I'll do your basic inversion, eversion, dorsiplantar flexion stuff. But for the most part, it's, you know, I do everything from a very, you know, try to mix it into my lifts. And I've found a lot of success with just basic calf raises from different angles, whether it's even bent knee calf raises, straight leg calf raises, single leg, double leg, whatever it may be.
Now, is that just because for the most part, maybe those athletes were so grossly undertrained that their, you know, the threshold that they needed to drive adaptation was just so low?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And then I have some that are very high level athletes that I'll do, you know, more of your advanced movements with, but yeah, it varies on the athlete really.
Now for your journey and anybody that was listening to that, what would, you know, how could people try to do this, you know, something similar as you and give them some career advice? Because they might be like, man, Jeremy, I like what you're doing, man. How can I do it?
You know, I mean, God, that's a really good question. I think my career has been such a roller coaster, Coach. It's been unreal. I mean, I never expected my career to go where it was. I think like a lot of strength coaches, when I first got into this, I thought football, football, football. And then I started falling in love with basketball. And then when I went to Cornell, I did everything but basketball. And I really fell in love with the other sports too. And that's where I really got into golf. And I worked with the golf
team. How great is swim and dive? Did you get to work with swim and dive?
I did. And I really enjoyed them. I had some really great.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, they're fun. They're really fun. I worked with swimming for 2 years. And I had some really cool swimmers. They were a lot of fun. And they got into it. You know, they enjoyed it. They enjoyed the weight room.
And they enjoyed when somebody would pour into them because let's call it what it is. Most of the time coaches don't.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true because they're not football. They're not basketball. Correct. And, you know, I think what I found at Cornell, I had a lot of favorite sports there. I got into soccer quite a bit at Cornell. But women's rowing was one of my favorite sports at Cornell and they were so much fun. And when I first got them, it was a squad of like 70 girls, lot of walk-ons, never done anything. And then as the coach was able to put her culture in, she got like your rowers and rowers who went on to the Olympics. Oh, wow. And I mean, we went from my first year, like seventh in the Ivy Leagues to 3 years later, number 13 in the country.
Oh, wow.
And it was a blast. And the coach bought into it. And then the athletes bought into it. And what we would do is, I mean, I think some of my favorite moments of strength coach, things I still remember. Every Monday night in the fall, they had a weight room at the boathouse, and we would mix practice with weights. So she would split them up into groups of four, and it'd be too cold to go on the water. So we would have a group lifting, a group on an erg, a group doing something else rowing wise, and then a group doing cardio on the bikes. And we would rotate them every 15 minutes. And it was so much fun, Coach. It was a blast. And it wasn't anything radical. Like, I mean, I didn't have a lot of space. So I could do, you know, did your RDLs, your lateral squats, some bench movements, a lot of pulling movements, a lot of one-arm rows, bent over rows, things like that, med ball work, med ball slams. And then they put some racks down in the garage. And so I would actually be running up and down stairs having a group doing some power movements, some cleans, some you know, pulls, whatever it may be, and then upstairs doing their secondary movements. And it was a blast. It was so much fun.
So the thing that I just wrote down right there and that I can hear in your voice and I want more coaches to hear about and I want you to elaborate on is the fun of doing things like that, but also your program in your weight room, first and foremost, has to be based upon the logistics of your weight room. It cannot be based upon, oh, I'm a triphasic guy. Oh, I'm a West Side guy. Oh, I'm an Olympic lifting guy. Oh, I'm a fascia guy. Oh, I'm a, you know, feed the cats only sprint guy. Like, if you don't have a facility to do the things that you say you want to do, you can't do it.
Exactly. And that's what I think made the programming so much fun, though, was I had to get really creative and still think about how am I going to get these athletes to perform at their best and see adaptations and see progress without doing a triphasic model or a West Side model or whatever it may be. I mean, it was as sometimes as remedial as doing a manual resisted front raise because I didn't have the dumbbells to have 50 athletes doing all front raises. So, okay, we're going to go manual resisted. So sometimes that's where like science gets thrown out the window, you know, you do what you have to do with what you have to work with. And I'll tell you, like you talked about, like the career path, that was like the best training and experience I could possibly get as a strength coach moving forward into my career, especially when I got into basketball and we're doing hotel workouts. And you know how hotel gyms are. You might have a great hotel gym. You might have nothing. So that really helped me, but it also really grew my mind because I think I came into it, and I'll be the first to admit, I came into strength and conditioning as like very narrow-minded. Oh, you have to do this. You have to do this. You have to do this. And then when you're presented with a situation where you can't do that, but you got to figure out a way to get the job done, it makes you better. It makes you better as a coach. And I think that really helped me grow as a coach and get me out of that, you know, single-mindedness mindset.
Well, to that, I mean, first of all, that's exactly why Corey from Cognella reached out to me, Human Kinetics at the time, to write the book, Navigating a Career in Strength and Conditioning, to educate coaches. Like, this is not, my textbook is not going to replace any of the X's and O's, exercise physiology of VO2. Like, when this book is a going in classrooms, the 200, 300 level, like you understand said principle, we'll talk high level on some of those things, but it's to explain the career path of college, high school, professional, tactical, private sector, because even within professional sport, so many different rabbit holes, college, all the different rabbit holes. And like, it's, we wrote this, or I wrote the book and he reached out to me about it. And now the publishing team is going through their process of editing and doing all those things so we can get it out to coaches to help educate them. So that way coaches aren't growing up in that world that you and I did, where it was like, hey, if you don't work in college football or basketball or pro football or basketball, you're a gigantic loser. And it's like, that's really not the case in our industry. And then the second thing is, I think you're a better coach because of that. And that's something that Mike Chapman had said when we were working at Towson together. He's now down at LSU. He's like, anybody can program in a palace when you have every single piece of equipment and it's a big room. He's like, who can get something done in the swack, right? Like, who can do it when it's a little dirty?
Exactly. And I've been in some palaces and I've been in some rooms that had nothing. And so they all helped me because, I mean, obviously it's great to have the palace, but it's like you said, it's easy when you have everything and you've got all the space and you've got all the help. It's hard when, you know, when I was at Cornell, I had 200 athletes by myself and I had 8 teams. And I mean, we're talking like, at one point I had baseball, sprint football, you know, 175 and under football. Yep. I had both soccers, women's hockey, women's rowing, lightweight rowing.
Powerlift has been my choice for strength and conditioning equipment ever since I got into the field. Right now, I still have their racks, I have their barbells, I have their bumpers, specialty bars, and we have the IMTP device at Goldfinch, and it's been great for us because it's allowed us to free up the rack where we used to have to do the IMTPs. Now, we use that IMTP device, roll it around, we've created more space. You have to check them out. Doesn't matter if in your college, high school, pro, tactical, or private, they have the ability to make whatever customizations and whatever adjustments you need. I was a part of the weight room that was the 32 brand new rack facility at Iowa football. You see what they did for TCU football. Doesn't matter how big, how small, whatever your customizations are, Powerlift is number one in the exercise equipment space for a reason. Check them out in the link down below.
And I was in charge of our student employees. So you have to think fast, you know, and you have to get creative because I might have 40 minutes with a team, then I got to go to another team. And then I got to go to another team. You got to constantly shift gears. So I think that really helped me grow too. But it does make you better because this is a very, you know, we talk about periodization. There's nothing linear about strength and conditioning. It's undulating as undulating can get. And you're right. We got caught in that rabbit hole, college sports, pro sports. I was talking to a friend of mine last night who spent years in the NFL and years at big time college football. And he's in the private sector now, and he's like, what have you noticed about the private sector? And I said, I feel like I can think better, and I feel like I'm a better coach because now I've got, you know, 30 clients that I see one-on-one that all need different things, and I have to give them those things. I'm not going to get away with just sitting here and saying, oh, we're just going to do this because I think it's good for you. I have to find what works. I mean, one client today said, I want to be able to reach down and pick the ball up out of the hole without having to use my club as a crutch. Another one, I've got chronic hip tightness. Another one, I've got knee issues. Another one just had shoulder replacement. I mean, so you have to think along those lines. And I think one cool story I have for this is I train somebody. I picked her up 3 months after she had a stroke. And I had to go to colleagues who've dealt with that and say, okay, how do I attack this woman? How do I help her? Because she's counting on me to help her along with her physical therapist. And that was like so much learning, but I saw so much success with that. And granted, piece of the pie. I'm an ingredient. She did a lot of the work on her own, but to be able to be a part of that and actually help her and not hurt her I look at that as one of like the highlights of my career.
That's incredible. Like, and hearing you say that kind of teed up where I was going to kind of ask you, like, we talked about, you know, helping better educate young coaches. And that's why I put out that textbook. And that's why Strength Coach Network is out and all the things that we do here. How can the educational process for students, you know, if you're a young strength and conditioning coach, like how can that process be streamlined and made better where there is a course, you know, like courses on understanding extreme conditions like that, because you might get an athlete like that, understanding, communicate, like what does coursework, how can we as a whole try to influence people that are making decisions at universities and colleges to help out young professionals?
You know, I think you said it when you said that, you know, we were of the age of just, if you're not college football or you're not college sports, you don't matter. We're past that, and we need to get past that in the educational part of it. Sports are amazing. I mean, I cannot say I've had so many great memories and experiences in sports, and now I'm building just as many in the golf world in the private sector. I think we need to get a curriculum, first of all. I mean, I don't think there's much of a curriculum for strength coaches. I mean, so many times people, even now, oh, so what do? Just put people on machines and watch them? Yeah, that's it. We're going to go on the leg extension. And I'm just going to watch them and have them do leg extension and just go, you know, yeah.
That was good.
Yeah. Like great. Yes, we all do. We all put them on machines. That's one thing. But we're coaching them. There's a coaching component to it. Why are we on that machine? So I think there needs to be a curriculum, like athletic trainers have a curriculum. Physical therapists have a curriculum. We're just as specialized in a different way. we need to have a curriculum. I think we're at a point now where strength and conditioning needs to be a degree, much like athletic training is a degree, because it's one thing to pass a CSCS, but what are we doing with that knowledge now? And do we have the knowledge from that CSCS to go and be a good strength coach?
Vitruv has been my choice for VBT for years now, not only because of the encoder and how well it works with the app, and you can film movements with the camera and get live variable feedback in real time if you so choose to on the app, but the fact of the amount of content they have been pushing out to help coaches better understand VBT. It's not only just to move the bar faster. You can be working on what's the appropriate load for high rep sets based off velocity loss. You can be looking at velocity loss threshold between sets, in between reps. VBT is not just moving the bar fast. It's moving the bar fast with heavy weights. It's not just moving light weight fast. And Vitruv has been at the forefront educating coaches on VBT and how to do it the right way. Check them out in the link down below.
I can tell you, and I'm not knocking the CSCS because I've been NSCA for many years and I think it's great. And it tests us, but it's not giving us the experience we need. And there's not enough young coaches who are getting that hands-on experience like ATs are at college. Okay, watch a football game. How many are young students getting the experience to be an athletic trainer on that sideline? How many strength coaches do you see getting that experience as a freshman, sophomore, junior in college? So that's kind of where I'm going with it. I think we need a curriculum and we need to teach it more, and we need to teach what the profession looks like, both in private and in college. And so everybody has that basic understanding so they don't go to a job and after 2 years they burn out because they're worked 80 hours a week and they're like, oh, I can't make any money. I can't feed myself or my family. Now I have to go do something else.
That's exactly why I wrote the book, because it's like, listen, if you want to, like, if you're going to get into this industry, because it can be great, but like, you just need to know the risks and rewards. Like, if you're going to go work in American football or basketball at like the high level, you're going to get fired if the coach gets fired. If
yep.
your chances are you'll have the ability to earn more money. If you're going to work for the rowing and you're going to work for the Olympic sports, you're not going to get fired, but you're not going to earn as much money. And it's like, it was almost like, let me tell you all the unwritten rules so you can go into this profession eyes wide open and know what you're getting into, instead of like, oh, it's the best career it's the greatest thing in the world. You get to wear clothing and you don't have to wear a suit and tie unless you become an AD. But it's like, yeah, some of these entry level jobs are $30,000 and they want you to have a master's degree. Like, here's the reality of it.
Yeah. I mean, my first college job paid me $19,000. I mean, and I had 14 teams. And then I went to Cornell and I wasn't making much, and I built that position really well for what it needed for me. And I stayed 6 years, and that's a testament to what I had at Cornell. Yeah. Great athletes, love the area. And when it was time to go, I was really sad, but you know, there's also a progression of growth. And you know, when you hit a ceiling, you hit that ceiling hard and there's no way off of it. So sometimes the only way out of it is to actually get out and move on. And that's the other thing they don't tell you about this profession is, you know, sometimes that the job, you outgrow the job.
Ooh.
And I've seen that with myself. I've seen it with other coaches. And I've also seen coaches stay too long, whether it be a strength coach, basketball coach, whatever it may be. You outgrow that job. And you don't see that in some other professions. But in coaching, I think you see it a lot. I mean, because your growth is faster than what they're willing to pay you for that growth.
Ooh. I want to find your opinion on this, working in your private setting and working with golf after your experiences in pro and college. How can we change the narrative around college athletics? And like, sure, if you're going to work long, if you're going to work 40 hours, make it be strong and intense. And, you know, so much so, like Hewitt Tallon wrote a LinkedIn post about it, CEO of and co-founder of Team Builder, one of the sponsors, shout out to Team Builder. He talked about like your 40 hours, like that's what the employee, like you owe them that. Yes, give it to them, but you should be exhausted by the end of it, instead of this world where like, it took us 40 or it took us 50 hours, 55. Like, I just don't see, like, a golfer would never be like, hey, Jeremy, brother, it took me 5.5 hours to play 18. It's like usually, and you're like, wait a minute, doesn't it take like 4 or 350 depending on the course? I'm like, well, yeah, but we were just, we were really getting after it. You'd be like, no, you probably weren't I'm saying this because it's like, how do we change the brainwashed people that think it's again, work your 40 hours to the point of exhaustion and you're just gassed from everything that you did. But I think we're underestimating and undervaluing how much work can get done when you shut up, you actually do your job, and you're not just bullshitting throughout the day.
Exactly. And I think that's a narrative. I don't know how to get past that because we're still in grind culture. And I saw it at NSCA National this year.
Dasher has completely changed the game for how I'm able to time my athletes, whether I'm doing ACEL, Max Velo, or Curvilinear running. Had the blues, had the blacks at Goldfinch. Now that I have the silvers, this has saved me so much time in setup breakdown. If I'm going from Ankeny to Huxley, or from Ankeny to the Nevada location, or Nevada to Huxley, like wherever I got to go time athletes, it has made my ability to go from one place to another so much easier with the silvers. Strength coaches that have to go from one field to the other, or from the field to the court, this will help you save time. Now, in the spirit of saving time, you also have the ability to have an API interaction with TeamBuilder, so now you can see all the data on the back end. Seeing data on the back end, Dasher has a free app, a player profile app that'll allow athletes to see their data. Over 6,000 coaches and athletes have done so. And if you want more than just the timing gates, if you check them out in the link down below, they have solutions to help you out with vertical jump, broad jump, RSI, all that. Check them out in the link down below.
You know, I mean, it was the same conversation over and over. It was, we work too much, but we have to work this much. We're not paid enough. How do we change it? Oh, I don't know what to do. Like it's been this, it's a merry-go-round. It's the definition of insanity is what it is. Yes. And I mean, when I was a young strength coach, I had that mindset. Oh, I have to work more. I have to work more. It's not sustainable. And, you know, I mean, you're right. 40 hours is a long time. That's a lot of your week. If you can't get it done in 40 hours, it's going to be hard to get it done. And granted, there's always extenuating circumstances. Like, yes, you know, if you're traveling with a team,
yes,
that's different. If you're waiting for games, I didn't really call that work. Yeah. I mean, when I was my last college job at Duluth, I'd be there on Saturday sometimes from 6 a.m. till midnight. That were games. I'd go home for a few hours, but half the time I wasn't working. I was sitting there watching football on TV while I was waiting for a game to start, or I was eating a meal or something like that, you know? Yeah. But you're still there.
Yeah.
I think what you have to do is just, it comes down to education again. And it comes down to, you're not getting medals for grinding yourself down. I mean, and I think it's an old strength coach culture of like, the more you do in the weight room, the more you do, you got to do one more, got to do one more. And, you know, I really believe in what is the minimal effective dose? And how do we get the most out of that minimal effective dose when we're training? So what can we do in 40 hours? We can do a lot. I mean, there are days that I will work 10 hours here. That's just because of my clients.
Yep.
But for the most part, this is the first job I've ever had where I can say I can get everything done in 40 hours and still go home on Friday at 3 o'clock or 3:30 and not go back to work till Monday morning and feel refreshed when I come back Monday morning.
And you're literally doing things better at a higher level, producing more because you're just operating at a higher level.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And it's like, okay, if you're training an athlete, do you want them so sore the next day that they can't move for 3 days? Or do you want them to come back and be able to do more the next day? The same thing with us as coaches. I mean, it wrecks people. I mean, I can tell you personally, it wrecked me physically for many years to a point where my body broke down. My last year at Virginia, I had to take 6 weeks off to have hip surgery.
Really?
And yeah. I mean, I'd never taken a day off work in my life.
Yeah.
Like, for that. And I had to go on medical leave to have hip reconstruction surgery. And then I was on a crutch for 4 months after that. I was in PT for 6 months and I'm traveling with a team and trying to train people. Like, you know, your body just breaks at some point. It just gets to a point where, you know, physically you break, mentally break, emotionally you break, and then you're no good to your athletes.
No good to anybody.
Yeah. No good to your family, your friends, your athletes. You become, it
you
just
go, get down this negative spiral, and it's almost like coaches don't even realize it. It's like when you're like the analogy that I'll use from a book about sleep is like with sleep deprivation being legally drunk. It's like when you're drunk at the bar and you think like, oh, I'm good to drive. You don't even realize that you're impaired. And like, that's how sleepwalk and just deprived all these coaches are without being, and that's part of the obsession that I have is like, all right, I got to wake you up.
Yeah. And I think that's important. I mean, I can tell you, when I was at Cornell in the wintertime and I had all those teams, the problem with the teams I had, I loved them all, it was the timing of them. So I had so many winter sports or so many fall sports that they were all in off-season training in the wintertime. So there was a point where I would train till I would leave the weight room at 8:30 on a Thursday night, and I would have men's soccer back in at 5:30 the next morning. And so you talk about
every day wasn't like that. And then, like you said, in season, so like there was cycles where like, okay, it wasn't as bad in the, in like, and that's the ebbs and flows where it's like, as long as you understand it and you know, like, hey, I'm not going to do as much during this week cause it ain't, I ain't got as much to do, but I gotta stock up for when it comes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's hard too, because you'd go through 3 or 4 months where you don't see the light of day. And, you know, obviously being upstate New York, yeah, you're going crazy. And then you're living in upstate New York where you're not seeing light anyway because it's snowing half the time and it's freezing cold. And I always joked around that I would be driving in front of the plows at 5 a.m. going to work. I'm looking behind me. There are the plows. I'm like, oh, I guess I'll plow for you guys. You're right.
I should have.
And
there's so many straight coaches that just heard that like, yeah, that's been my life.
Yeah. And I wouldn't trade it for the world. Like, I mean, this is not a bash on the profession. It's how do we make it better? How do we make this a sustainable profession? So I think Ron McKeefer said this. How many strength coaches actually retire as strength coaches? Not many. I mean, because it's just so hard. And it's sad because it really is a great profession. And we can create so much lasting impact, not just on athletes, but on coaches too. I mean, a lot of the coaches I worked with are still my friends. A lot of the athletic trainers I worked with are still my friends. So we can create such a long-lasting impact. We have to make this sustainable for people.
Yeah, and that's where, like, you know, these – when questions get asked, because, you know, people – we talked about NIL kind of changing things. Like, there may come a time where, because athletes now have so much power, and who knows – they've had power in professional. But it's like, if some professional athlete ever tried to say, oh, this strength coach isn't qualified or isn't – I don't think they're good to do their job. It's like – well, who is that athlete? And then, but what is anybody or any organization or who, how can we protect strength coaches so that way they can actually feel safe?
Well, I think it comes back down to the education. It comes back down to the certification. It comes down to how we approach who we are as a profession. Because right now, I'll be honest, and this might be not be the most popular thing to say, we're split. I mean, between the CSCCA and the NSCA, I feel like we're split. Both organizations are offering great things. Both organizations want what's best for strength coaches. But we got to come together and we've got to have, I think, more stringent testing demands to get everybody in. And I mean, because right now you get a certification, you can be a strength coach. But have we done enough to actually get them the experience? And that's my thing with it. That's where I'm talking about, like, where athletic trainers and physical therapists have so much more ahead of, there's more ahead of us because of those hours that they have to log, the experience they get in front of people.
Well, and there's also not too, like, there's no, there's the NATA. There's
exactly.
The APP, yep. Like, they're the APTA, like Association of Physical Therapists. So, like, they're united. There's not this fractionalization. Yep.
And I think the other thing we need to talk about is communication. We don't think about the communication side of things and how we are communicating with athletes, with coaches, how we're communicating with the public. I think to a degree, people still think we're the weight room guys, you know? We're the guys with, you know, walk around with our protein shakes and our gallon waters and we're lifting weights and we're the tough guys. What are we trying to accomplish as strength coaches? It can't just be, we got to make them tougher, because I think you and I both know that toughness doesn't come from
how it's just so vague. It's task specific. Yeah,
exactly. Are we tough? I think we're tough because we get out of bed in the morning, and go to work. we wake up early and we go to work. That makes it tough. It makes an athlete is tough because they get up at 5 a.m. They lift, they go to class, they go to practice, they go to film, they go back to class, they have homework, and they wake up and do it again the next day. That makes you tough.
I mean, just like that golfer we were talking about, the golfer that can focus on that hard putt, that's tough.
Exactly. You know, I mean, I think if you look at a professional golfer, they are some of the toughest athletes you'll meet because that is so hard what they do on a daily basis. And it's so mentally challenging that, you know, I mean, they're not in there throwing up crazy amounts of weight every single day and like trying to like, oh, I got to be tough. I got to do this weight room session. Then I got to go out and hit 10,000 balls because I'm tough, you know? I mean,
yeah, that just goes back to the vagueness and like needing to have KPIs so that way we could be able to actually track what moves the needle rather than having vagueness, right?
Exactly. Yes. And I think you're right. Like the NATA, they have one governing body, the NATA. Right now, strength and conditioning has two. So it's like, where do you turn and how do you determine which one is better than the other one? Is one better than the other one? I don't think so. I think they both offer different things.
Yeah. And it's like, how do we best serve at the end of the day, those practitioners that are doing the thing and working with the athletes doing, I mean, what we all know is amazing. Like working with athletes is great, period. Sentence is over.
Yep, it is. And how do we support those people that are in the trenches right now? I mean, and especially those young ones that are only making 30, 40,000 a year. How do we get those salaries higher? Because they need to be higher.
Yeah. And because a CEO, they're not going to just, a CEO is the athletic director. They're not just going to pay more money just because they have to. And like, as strength coaches, it's almost like finding a way of like, all right, hey, don't take less than a certain amount. But it's like, at that point now we're talking unionization and like the, just all the complexities that comes with that. But it's like, that's what Keir said before. It's a race to the bottom. If people don't start standing up for them and saying, no, I won't work for that.
Yeah. And it's hard because people want to get in and they're looking at getting these, you know, young coaches or you were there. I was there wide eyed. We want to just take any opportunity we can get.
Yeah. Like I got in working, I was below the poverty line working at the University of Maryland College Park, earning $750 every 2 weeks post tax just to get my foot in the door in Power Five football.
Yeah. And that's what you wanted. So you make the sacrifices, but once again, then you got to keep like, you know, I've seen a lot what you talk about. How do you become a director? Once you're a director, how do you stay a director? You know, there's different phases of this. So you have to be smart enough and have the education once you're in to stay in and understand.
The thing that got you there won't keep you there.
Exactly. And I mean, I think that's brilliant when you know, I've seen you post that and that's a talking point that people don't talk about. You know, once you get to that point, how do you stay there? And how do you take it to the next level? You know, I think we need more education, not just at the college level, but once we get into strength and conditioning. And that's where the support of the NSCA, the CSCCA really needs to come in. And that's where I think I want them to come together so badly because I know people.
So do I.
And you, like you, I know people in both of them. I mean,
it's like, yeah, the way that I see it is like, you could have it where it's like, they represent the, you know, strength and condition. Like, that could be college, right? That could be the college hub. And then like tactical could have its own hub. High school, bring the NHSSCA, bring us all back together. And it's like, sure, you're within this is kind of your smaller group under this, but let's all be back together pushing and doing things to get like doing things the right way, right? Like there's a reason that it's the United States of America, right? Like the strength of, you know, for me, the state of Iowa is the fact that we're all like, there is still a federal government in a way. Like, now we can dive down the rabbit hole of how to make all those things. But like, if we can actually just come together, it's like a country doesn't attack just Iowa. They would be doing it as a direct attack on the entire, you know, country. And that goes for any, you know, like that whole premise.
Yes, I agree. And I think, I mean, like I was going to mention, like, you know, like Pat Ivey is the guy who got me started in this business. And he's one, you know, he's very involved now. I think he's the president of the CSCCA or he's up there. And I think he's the kind of guy who wants that togetherness. And I think, you know, I mean, But that's what we need, though. You know, we need to be one. All this infighting is not going to solve anything. Division is going to create more division, and the gap becomes so wide, it's going to be so hard to bring it back together. We need to come together. And we need to stop bashing each other, too. I mean, we can go down that rabbit hole, but so many strength coaches just I've never seen it. I don't see it in other professions. They love to bash each other. Well, why is this guy doing this? This guy should do this. This guy should do that. Well, I would do triphasic. Well, he's just doing this. This is wrong. You don't know what that person is doing. You don't know the context in which they're training people.
Jeremy, I appreciate your time, brother. I'm going to go train an athlete. You go do the same. Thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure to get to chat.
Thanks. I really appreciate the time.
Have a great one.
You too.
Thanks for watching that video. If you enjoyed it, click right here for videos just like that, and make sure you click here to subscribe to our channel. Have a great rest of your day.